Okay, let's look at practices now that can be helpful in reducing rajas. Practices to reduce rajas and cultivate sattva are down-regulating in nature. These are useful when the student is hyper-aroused, as we can often see in anxiety and trauma. So all the practices I'm going to share with you here are in addition to those in the sattva section. So if you're selecting practices for reducing rajas, make sure that you also consult the cultivating sattva section. Some of the practices here I'm going to presume you already know from your yoga teacher training, and others you'll find in the practice library. So do check them out. Let's start with asana. To meet your students where they are in a rajasic state, begin with active asanas and sequences and gradually move to asanas and sequences that have a calming effect. We're going to go into more detail about what these are in just a moment, but in this mini drawing here, you can see how the sequence moves from active postures, there's sun salutations in the beginning there, to less active, like the cat-cow sequence, and then child's pose, pranayama, and shavasana at the end. Gradually and slowly going down over the course of the practice. You get the idea, right? So, active practices might include, but are not limited to, moving between asanas in a dynamic and energizing way, like vinyasas, choosing variations of asanas and sequences that are more dynamic and strenuous, moving repetition of postures instead of long holds, and dynamic sequences of postures like sun salutation or the flying cow sequence. I'm presuming you know at least one variation of a sun salutation. And the flying cow sequence is one that I learned from Amy Weintraub, the author of Yoga for Depression. And you can see me demonstrating this in the practice library. So calming practices include, but are not limited to, forward bends. So we've got standing and on the floor here. Moving between asanas slowly and calmly. Choosing variations of asanas and sequences that are more gentle and less strenuous. Restorative postures. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about what these are here. That would be a whole other training, but I've put a link below for some restorative training if you're interested. Shavasana with nourishing head support and blankets or sandbags on the belly, torso, or in the hands. Make sure you check out the video in the practice library for this one. That nourishing head support is out of this world. Highly recommend it. When teaching various asanas, bring the emphasis to feeling grounded in whatever posture your students are in. So, for example, in standing postures, you can cue your students to have a firm base. In seated or lying postures, cue students to sense the earth underneath the body, fully supporting them. In Tadasana, mountain pose, or Vrikasana, tree pose, cue students to imagine perhaps having roots underneath their feet that go down deep into the earth. Now, we don't want to tell our students what to feel, but we can guide them to tune into a sense of groundedness and stability, realizing that they are supported and that they can access an innate sense of stability within. When guiding postures and sequences with the breath, bring the focus onto the exhalation rather than the inhalation, as the exhalation has a calming effect on the nervous system. We'll talk about this some more in the pranayama section very soon. Let's take a look now at contraindications and precautions for asana. So, students with rajasic dominance generally benefit from restorative and gentle asanas. However, they may find them difficult and be restless if they're taught too early in class. Try meeting your students where they are by starting with active practices, gradually slowing the class down, and ending with calming practices and eventually restorative postures. Some students who experience anxiety find that a vigorous asana practice helps them to burn up their anxious energy, and they don't want to practice in a gentle or restorative way. However, if students only practice dynamic asana, they can end up even more rajasic and never get the embodied experience of deep rest and relaxation. it's important that we listen to and honor our students' needs and desires for their practice. We don't want to presume that we know more about what our students need than they do. However, knowing that it's sometimes difficult to see through our own conditioning, we could gently suggest that they try out a short, gentle, or restorative practice at the end of a vigorous practice and see how it works for them. Let's look at pranayama now. Lengthening the exhalation is a powerful way to downregulate the nervous system and to cultivate a sense of peacefulness and ease. Like I mentioned previously, a longer exhalation is thought to engage the parasympathetic, the rest and digest branch of the autonomic nervous system, and a longer inhalation to activate the sympathetic or the fight or flight branch. You might be able to feel the relationship between the inhalation and the sympathetic branch and the exhalation and the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system yourself. Sit comfortably, place two fingers on your pulse at your wrist or your neck, and notice the pace of the pulse as you breathe in and as you breathe out. You might like to pause the lecture for a moment as you do this. And as you do it, you might notice that your heartbeat is slightly faster on the inhalation than it is on the exhalation. It's fascinating, isn't it? So lengthening the exhalation has been called a vagus nerve hack, and it's thought to kickstart the calming influence of the parasympathetic branch of the nervous system. The vagus nerve represents the main component of the parasympathetic nervous system as it travels a long path from the brainstem down to the abdomen. So it's often described as the wanderer nerve. The vagus nerve is thought to be a prime candidate in explaining the effects of pranayama and other contemplative activities on mental health, physical health, and cognitive performance. So coming back to this slide now, lengthening the exhalation is one of the most simple and powerful tools we have in our yogic toolbox for reducing anxiety and stress. Before we start inviting our students to lengthen the exhalation, however, I suggest inviting them to notice and sense the breath just as it is, as was outlined in the Sattva Pranayama section. And then, if you feel they would like to do some more, invite your students then to equalize the breath so the inhalations and the exhalations are even. Guidelines for this are also in the Sattva Pranayama section. Now, this might be enough all by itself for some students, and both can be given as options instead of extending the breath, particularly in a class setting where you're not able to closely monitor all the students. So a really simple and effective way to support students to gently extend the exhalation is to cue them to add a little bit to the out-breath or to slow down the exhalation a little bit. So this is a gentle way to extend the exhalation without the confusion of counting or having to do it in a prescribed way. The students are less likely to be forceful if we use words like a little bit. Another way we can support our students to gradually extend the exhalation is through counting. So start with four counts in and four counts out, like we did in Samavritti Pranayama. And then over time, extend the exhalation one count at a time. So starting with an inhale-exhale ratio of 4-4, and then extending the length of the exhale to 4-5, 4-6, 4-7, or 4-8 ratios. For many students, a 4-4 ratio or a 4-5 ratio will be as far as they can go without force or discomfort. And it's really important to communicate that this is just as effective as extending the out-breath further, as it's vital for the practice to be gentle, comfortable, and easeful. I suggest starting with noticing and sensing the breath, and then offering students the option of a 4-4 ratio. And then after a few rounds, noticing and sensing the effects of the practice on the body, breath, and mind. And then if the 4-4 ratio felt okay, offer the option of 4-5, and after that, an option of 4-6. And between each round, pausing to breathe naturally and sense the effects of the practice on the body, breath, and mind. And only moving on to the next practice if the previous one felt easeful and comfortable. And if it didn't, return to breathing naturally again. In a drop-in group yoga class, I suggest not teaching a ratio of more than 4-6 at all, as even this can be pretty difficult for many students. And without working one-on-one with a student and checking in with them individually, it's really impossible to know the effects the pranayama practice is having on them. So play it safe in your classes. And you can join me for this practice in the practice library. Sounding or chanting is another way to extend the exhalation. When we chant, the exhalation is naturally extended. So without even thinking about it, it just happens. So if it's appropriate in the setting that you're teaching in, and if it's appropriate with the students who are in front of you, chanting Om or another yogic mantra can be delightful. But you can use any culturally appropriate chant or sound in your class. Chanting, kind of like we do in Brahmari Pranayama, but without using the hands, can be really a really nourishing sound for many people now. You might need to try this with me now. So if you'd like to do it with me, let's inhale through the nose, and on the exhale, we'll sound together, and we'll do it 3 times together. So your eyes can be open or closed, whatever you prefer. If you'd like to join me, let's inhale. Inhale. Once more, if it feels okay. Notice the effects of the practice. Perhaps the resonance of the sound in the body long after the sound itself is gone. Okay. Baya Kumbhaka, or holding the breath comfortably after the exhalation, is thought to be helpful for people experiencing anxiety, and it's another way to slow the breath down even further. So if students find it comfortable to extend the out-breath, then you might consider adding the option of holding the breath after the exhalation. So you can start this by introducing a pause after the exhalation. And if it's comfortable, consider introducing counting that includes retention after the exhalation. So as always, start small, gradually build up over an extended period of time, and ensure that the emphasis is always, always, always on ease and comfort. So you might like to try a ratio of 4 counts inhalation, 6 counts exhalation, and 2 counts holding after the exhalation, but only if it feels comfortable. Chandra Beda Pranayama, left nostril breathing, is thought to be great for reducing anxiety or down-regulating the nervous system. It's a variation of Nadi Shodhana Pranayama, alternate nostril breathing. But instead of breathing equally through both nostrils, you inhale through the left nostril and exhale through the right, and so on, using the hand mudra to direct the airflow like I talked about in the Pranayama section of the Sattva lecture. I think that it's a good idea to balance this afterwards with several rounds of alternate nostril breathing. You can check out this practice in the practice library. Now, Shitali or Sitkali Pranayama is a cooling breath practice that can be great to cool down on a hot day or if you're feeling a bit hot-headed. It's thought to have a cooling effect on the mind and helps to regulate the breath and the heart rate. So to teach Shitali Pranayama, invite your students to curl their tongue and inhale through the tube that's created. And then pull the tongue back into the mouth and exhale through the nose. So ideally the tongue is moist, so you can roll it back as far as possible against the palate during the exhalation, so each breath is as refreshing as the first. It's important to know that not everyone can curl their tongue though. So for your students who can't, teach Sitkali Pranayama instead. In Sitkali Pranayama, instead of curling the tongue, invite the students to bare their teeth as they breathe in, placing the tongue in the space between the upper and lower teeth so the air can still flow over the tongue, and practice otherwise in the same way. You can see Shitali Pranayama on the left and Sitkali Pranayama on the right. And as with all yoga practices, pause at the end to notice and sense the effects of the practice on the body, breath, and mind. Ujjayi Pranayama is a gentle breath technique that reduces the airflow by slightly contracting the glottis, which creates an ocean-like sound at the back of the throat. So Ujjayi Pranayama is said to have a calming effect on the system as a result of slowing down the breath and stimulating the vagus nerve with the vibration made by the resistance created in the vocal cord contraction. You can teach Ujjayi Pranayama by inviting your students to close their mouth, breathe through the nose, and gently constrict the throat so they can hear a gentle sound like the waves of the ocean or like Darth Vader, which quite frankly is less poetic but often much more helpful. Now, another way is to invite students to breathe like they're breathing through their throat, even though their mouth is closed. The way I was taught Ujjayi Pranayama in my early Ashtanga yoga days was to hold a hand in front of the mouth, imagining that it was a mirror, inhale through the nose, and exhale through the mouth like you're fogging up the mirror with your breath. So you try that a few times, and then close the mouth and breathe with a similar quality, only with the mouth closed this time. When teaching Ujjayi Pranayama with anxious students, invite them to only make the sound on the exhalation, as anxious students may tend to pull on the inhalation, which may increase sympathetic dominance and can be activating rather than calming. So it's just on the exhalation. Now, while demonstrating can generally be really helpful for students, if you demonstrate the Ujjayi sound loud enough for a whole class to hear, it might be triggering for a student who was acutely aware of their breath during a traumatic incident, or if the perpetrator was breathing noisily or heavily, so be really mindful of this. Ideally, the sound is soft and barely audible without any strain or force. Mountain climbing breath is an adaptation of a practice I learned from Amy Weintraub, who I've talked about before, the author of Yoga for Depression. I suggest only teaching this practice to students on a one-on-one basis rather than in a group setting, so you can monitor your students and assess the suitability of this practice more closely. The beauty of mountain climbing breath is that it meets the students where they are when they're feeling anxious or rajasic. One of the best things we can do to calm our nervous system when we're feeling over-aroused is to breathe deeply. But if you've ever been close to a panic attack, you probably know how impossible this can be. Mountain climbing breath begins in a very activating or energizing way, meeting the activation that is already present in the student, then gently supporting them to calm it right. So the practice is in three parts. In the first part, you inhale like you're stepping up a mountain, sipping the breath in through the nose in steps until you get to the top. At the top of the inhalation, pause just for a moment and imagine that you're standing at the top of the mountain, looking out over a beautiful, peaceful, and calming view that's open and spacious. And then exhale smoothly out through the nose like you're sliding gently and smoothly down a mountain. I suggest trying it out once to test it out, and then if it feels okay and if there's no discomfort or dizziness, then practice three rounds and then breathe naturally again, sensing the effects of the practice on the body, breath, and the mind. This practice is in the practice library, so do make sure you check it out. Now, if the first part felt okay, you might like to try the second part. In this part, we slide up the mountain, so the inhalation is smooth, and then we slide down the mountain with a smooth exhalation. You might like to try this three times, then breathe naturally again, sensing the effects of the practice on the body, the breath, and the mind. And then if the first two parts felt okay, you might like to try the final part. So in this final part, we slide up the mountain again with a smooth inhalation, and then we om down the mountain, chanting om on the exhalation. Om. So you might like to try this three times and then again breathe naturally, sensing the effects of the practice on the body, breath, and the mind. Now, when I practice mountain climbing breath, I feel a sense of calm in my body and an alertness or clarity in my mind. Maybe try it out and feel the effects that it has on you. Be curious to your unfolding experience. So placing a blanket over the body can be nourishing and grounding when Rajas is dominant. So when you're teaching pranayama and shavasana, offer a nourishing head support and a blanket over the body. In the practice library, you'll see a how-to video about how to create this nourishing head support that you can see in the photo. I love it. I highly recommend you trying it out. When teaching pranayama in a seated position, you might like to offer a blanket over the shoulders or around the lower back. So let's look at contraindications and precautions for pranayama now. Students with rajasic dominance generally need to deepen and slow down the breath. However, if a student is very anxious, they might find this difficult and may become more anxious if they're unable to do it. So try meeting your students where they are by simply noticing or sensing the breath in the body. Now this on its own can be helpful for students and you might not need any other practices at all. And isn't it interesting that when we notice or sense the breath, it often naturally starts to change anyway. When teaching pranayama for reducing rajas, focus on the breath being comfortable and easy. If the student tries to force the breath in any way, it will be activating, not calming, and will therefore have the opposite effect. Keep it gentle and simple. So I found that when students start to extend the length of the exhalation, they often force the breath out, which has more of an activating rather than a calming effect. So instead, you can cue students to slow down the exhalation rather than to extend it. And then they're less likely to think they need to get rid of more air or to push more air out as they exhale. Instead, we can support them to gently slow down the out-breath so it takes more time to release the breath on the exhalation. Makes sense, right? For some students, focusing on the breath can be triggering and can make pranayama impossible or even scary. If this happens, stop giving your students any instructions or directions about the breath and instead focus on something else like the body, the senses, or music. If teaching Ujjayi pranayama, invite anxious students to only make the Ujjayi sound on the exhalation, as they may tend to pull in the inhalation, which may increase sympathetic dominance and can be activating rather than calming. Avoid Antara Kumbhaka, which is holding the breath after the inhalation, as this has an activating effect. And avoid rapid breathing techniques such as Kapalabhati or Bhastrika Pranayama, as these also have an activating effect and might trigger a panic attack in a student with anxiety. Let's take a look now at meditation. So don't forget that we include all the meditation practices from the Sattva section, and here's a few more that are particular to reducing rajas. I am here meditation is another practice that I learned from Amy Weintraub, the author of Yoga for Depression. It can be practiced by sitting or standing, but I like to teach it while standing initially. Start by inviting your students to stand in a comfortable position with their legs about hip width apart and their knees softly bent. And then on the inhalation, imagine the air or the prana or the energy, whatever words you want to use, traveling up through the feet and up through the body and saying silently to yourself, I am. And then on the exhalation, imagine the air or the prana or the energy traveling back down through the body, through the feet and down into the center of the earth and saying silently to yourself, here. And repeat this a few times. I find this is a particularly grounding and nourishing practice when I'm feeling scattered and not present. It's a great practice to do yourself before your students arrive so you can be fully present with them when they show up. For example, when I was teaching the mental health aware yoga training in Copenhagen in Denmark, there were some serious bushfires back home in Australia at the same time. And it was a real challenge to be present at times where things were so full on at home. This practice really helped me to be present with myself and my students while I was teaching. So you'll find this practice along with heaps of others in the practice library. Counting the natural rhythm of the breath can be a simple and effective way to focus the mind. For example, you could invite your students to count the breath silently backwards from 9 to 1 in their natural breathing rhythm. It really doesn't matter what number you start at. To reduce rajas, however, invite your students to count down rather than up, as this is thought to have a calming and relaxing effect. I guess this is why they count down in hypnosis too. Although to be really clear, we're not trying to hypnotize our students, just drawing on that same principle. And just like we talked in the pranayama section, placing a blanket or weights on the body can be nourishing and grounding. When practicing meditation in Shavasana, try offering this nourishing head support that I keep talking about. Offer a blanket over the body and weights like a sandbag or a blanket over the belly. If practicing in a seated position, you could suggest that your student places a blanket over their shoulders or around their lower back. And again, this isn't for everyone, but it can be incredibly nourishing for some people. Offer it as an option, and your students can take it or leave it. So I don't have any additional contraindications or precautions for meditation to reduce rajas, but make sure that you review the contraindications in the sattva section, as these apply here as well. Let's take a look now at other practices for reducing rajas. These aren't traditional yoga practices, but they can be helpful, and you might like to try them out for yourself and perhaps share them with your students. Massaging the soles of the feet with the hands or with a ball can help students to downregulate, especially if they're feeling anxious or triggered in some way. There are heaps of sensory receptors on the soles of the feet, and self-massage can support students to connect with their body. And the feet are a part of their body that's less likely to be associated with trauma or body image concerns. This can also engage a busy mind, particularly if using proprioceptive and interoceptive cues. So if you're using a ball, try rolling the ball underneath the feet, linking the movement with the breath, like we talked about in the asana section in the sattva lecture. I once shared this practice with a client who had a really significant history of complex trauma. He was unable to tolerate any direction at all about the breath. He found it too ungrounding and triggering, so we couldn't go there at all. But he found that the practice of rolling a small physio ball under his feet, one at a time, was incredibly helpful and calming. Attending to the present moment through the senses can also be a really helpful way to support students to feel safe and to downregulate, especially if they're feeling anxious or triggered. Invite your students to notice 5 things that they can see, 5 things they can hear, and 5 things they can feel, pausing in between each sense to give them ample time to do this. You might also invite them to notice what they can smell and taste. Attending to the present moment through the senses can really help students to bring themselves into the present moment. Try it out for yourself sometime. It can be really Shaking the body can also be really helpful at times to downregulate. In times of high arousal, like we see in trauma or sexual arousal, the body often involuntarily and spontaneously shakes to reset the nervous system and reestablish equilibrium. And if this has been inhibited after a traumatic experience, the body can get stuck and be prevented from moving through the trauma and healing. So if students shake spontaneously, it's important to let them shake and don't try to stop them. Another thing you could do is to encourage students to shake their arms and legs in a way to release tension after a challenging posture, but be aware that this can also be activating, not releasing, for some students, and I really don't suggest that you try to get your students to intentionally shake to release trauma. Be like Taylor Swift and shake it off. Patting down the body can support students to come back into their body if they're feeling anxious, dissociated, feeling outside themselves, or just too much in their head. Patting down the body from head to toe, or even just on the legs and arms, helps us to come back into our body when we're not present and to feel the edges of our body. We can feel that we're real and we're solid. I'm sorry, I don't have a cute video for this one, but I hope you can imagine it. Okay, so that was yogic practices for reducing rajas. Now, it's not an exhaustive list, but I hope that it gives you a great idea of practices that are down-regulating in nature and useful in reducing rajas. I hope also that you get a sense of what practices reduce rajas and can apply this knowledge to your own personal practice and teaching. Try them out. Many of them are in the practice library and see the effect that they have on your system. It may or may not be the same as what I've suggested here.